Blog Talk Radio.
A lot to do tonight with the coach. Oh, and Herm Edwards is coming on too. I guess the new coach is really Ryan. On the air right now, live with Ryan Stern. I'm Randy Zellia, courtesy of Back Sports Page. Ryan, good evening. How are you?
Good evening, Randy. I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing all right. It's good to get this started on a Friday night. I feel a little out of place because it's about 11 o'clock in the morning. I'm looking out my window where I usually do the show, and I see dark instead of light, so this is a little different, but I think it's still just as good and just as fun. We have, like, a lot of show today. We have, like, too much show.
That's always a good thing, though, right?
I think so. You know, we're listed for 2 hours tonight. We have Herman Edwards coming on at 9:45 with us. We're gonna have a lot of fun with him, and we're gonna talk a lot of football tonight. We talk some free agency. We're gonna talk a little bit of draft. We're gonna talk about the New York Jets. That's right, Jets fans. We're talking Jets football on a Friday night in March. I know. I'm crying too.
It doesn't get better than that.
Yeah, Giants fans, we're going to discuss with Herman Edwards. We're going to talk about the Victor Cruz situation. We're going to talk about the fact that Tony Romo got a contract extension today for $108 million. Really? Really? $108 million.
Not just Tony Romo, but today really was a good Friday for a couple different players. You have the Tony Romo extension. You have the Justin Verlander extension. The Buster Posey extension. You had Adam Wainwright yesterday. There was a lot of money that was handed out the past couple days.
And we'll talk about the Major League Baseball signings. We'll jump into baseball later on today. I don't know if we officially have an NHL guest or not. I don't know if we ever confirmed that. Maybe Ryan can let me know in a little bit whether we have an NHL guest, but we will jump in a little bit to the NHL. 27, and it's done. The Miami Heat winning streak ended this past week. We'll definitely jump into that in a little bit. But Ryan, before we really go diving into anything, let's let everybody know where they can find us. Backsportspage.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Backsportspage. You are at, what's the Twitter handle?
Ryan Stern 33 NYR.
Okay. And I am Arzelia BSP. Gonna change that after my trip back to from Florida. We're gonna change that Twitter handle to Randy BSP, and we're good. Then we're all gangsta, and we're all, I don't know exactly what gangsta is, but that's okay.
I don't think gangsta fits you.
No, I definitely not. I think I may be the most unhip person in the face of the planet. you know, I think my famous Casper. No, with that being said, you know, some of the news that was coming out, a lot of sports news today, obviously, a lot of back and forth. And I guess we'll start, you know, we originally were discussing during the week what we were going to start with tonight. And before, when Coach Herman Edwards come on at 9:45, we'll discuss this topic as well, but I think the right place to start is the 27-game win streak coming to an end from the Miami Heat this past week. And let's take away all the nonsense. Let's talk about the on-the-court action and the on-the-court the gameplay, and look how they really did it. And how they really did it was they took advantage of the same weaknesses the Miami had that I said they've had all season long. Slowing down the pace and crashing the offensive boards. Chicago Bulls have enough fight on that team to do it, and they did it without Shaquem Noah. They did it without Derrick Rose. So they're doing it without those without those stars. So if you're the Miami Heat, you start doubting yourself because, look, they've done, look, the Chicago Bulls sort of laid out the recipe on how to beat you. Watch this. 27 straight wins of comebacks and other, you know, other comebacks and blowouts and fast break points, transition three-point shooting. It all happened. The Bulls stopped it. What do you think, Ryan?
The only time that I thought there was a chance that Miami was going to have a chance to win was when they went on the run early in the third quarter and they tied it up because Chicago had a 9-point lead at half. And they were pretty much dominating play. It wasn't even, I think, a 9-point game. I think it was that was probably the best-case scenario for the Heat, that it was only 9.5. When they made their run to tie it up early in the third, I thought, okay, here we go again. It's going to be the here comes 28, and we're going to look at the next time someone has a chance to beat them would be 30 against San Antonio. When Chicago was able to fend that off and go right back up by 7 within a minute, that's when I thought to myself, they're going to do this. And they didn't let Miami get any closer. And then the bonkers ending that it was with all of the flagrants and non-flagrants that that happened between the two teams.
And if you ever want to know who was better, Michael or LeBron, if Michael Jordan was on a team like that and they lost the game, Michael would just be so angry, he'd come back the next game and make the next team pay. Just like the Miami Heat are making the New Orleans Hornets play right now, as they have 6 minutes left in the third quarter, up 70-45. But what I mean by that is LeBron spouting off at the media, spouting off to anybody who would listen to him. The Miami Heat, they lost this game. You know, there's no ifs, ands, buts about it. The Miami Heat lost this game. And they can't whine about the calls because there's bad calls all around. Like, the one thing you want from NBA basketball is consistency from your referees. Whether it's bad or it's good, you want consistency. And then you were getting
Do you really want consistent bad calls? I mean, is that going to make everything better if a referee is going to, and speaking from someone who is, who does officiating, that's not what you're looking for. I know everyone, that's such a cliche, all you want is consistency. If it's consistently bad, that's not going to make anything better.
Listen, at the end of the day, I think that...
Okay, intro roll.
At the end of the day, you want to have it where there's consistency on both sides. If one side of the ball is going to be no call, I want the other side of the ball to be no call. If you're going to be calling the game very tight, call it tight throughout. Don't call it tight in the first half and then all of a sudden change up in the second half. You have to be consistent throughout in the officiating. And I thought there in the Chicago game, they were. They were calling flagrant fouls on both sides. They were calling, you know, listen, not for nothing, LeBron James is a manimal. Like, we call Kenneth Faried a manimal. LeBron James is a manimal, okay? We've never seen anything like it. He's a sick genetic freak. We've never seen anything like him in the NBA before. I think it's a rare breed that he is, and you have to tell him.
He may be the most physically gifted athlete in all of sports that you've ever seen, not just the NBA.
First off, I'm telling you right now, if he wins another championship and holds a press conference at the end of the year, announcing he's going to play football, okay. Then we're like, okay, you got to get out.
Remember when there were those commercials where, with the dream sequence that he was drafted by the Cleveland Browns? This was when he was still with the Cavs. And it actually stirred the pot of getting people thinking what would happen if LeBron ever decided to play football. First of all, no one just goes in and plays football. I, as physically gifted as he is, And with the pounding that he takes on a lot of nights, because teams give the Miami Heat their best, just like teams give the New York Yankees their best, just like teams give the New England Patriots their best. Teams give the Miami Heat their best, and they go after him because he is the best in the game right now. That's still nothing close to the pounding he would take in the NFL.
760-283-0846. 760-283-0846. If you want to jump in on this topic. Real quick, let's jump around the scoreboard real quickly. We have Herman Edwards calling in 5 minutes. Right now, the Boston Celtics have a 107-96 lead with 4.5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. The New York Knicks blowing out the Charlotte Bobcats at Madison Square Garden, 94-76, 8:55 remaining in that one. Detroit trailing Toronto, 93-71. Man, if there's a game on NBA ticket right now that no one is watching, it's Detroit and Toronto. Philly has a 95-85 lead over the Cleveland Cavaliers with just about an under a minute left. So that's a win for the Sixers. Wow, the Memphis Grizzlies bounced back with their loss from New York the other night as they are beating Houston 80-65 with 2.5 minutes left in the third quarter. We just said Miami before. Miami up 73-49 in New Orleans, 3:28 remaining in that one. Oklahoma City is trailing the Minnesota Timberwolves 74-69, 2.5 to go in the third quarter in that one. The Los Angeles Clippers at the San Antonio Spurs are at the half. And if I told you this score, you would be shocked to know that this, again, is halftime. 62-61 in San Antonio as the Spurs are trailing the Clippers by one. And in Denver, they've just about 8 minutes left until half. The Brooklyn Nets trailing the Denver Nuggets 35-28. And we already have one final, Orlando over Washington 97-92. That might have been the cricket night of the cricket game of the night right there. And then the 10 o'clock game tonight, Utah is visiting Portland. So that's the NBA score. That's the
In the NCAA tournament, you had the number one seed Louisville Cardinals pretty much holding off Oregon. They had a lead pretty much throughout the whole game. Oregon made it close, but Louisville was able to hold them off. Got a real close game going on with Kansas and Michigan. Right now, Kansas is up 3, and they're at the line, shooting 1-1. And the first free throw is made, so that it's now a two-possession game with 21 seconds left. So it looks like the number one seed Kansas Jayhawks will be able to hold off the number four seed Michigan Wolverines. Tipping off in about 15 minutes, you have probably the marquee game of the Sweet 16 with Duke and Michigan State. And just after that, you have Florida and the Cinderella of the tournament so far, Florida Gulf Coast.
And, of course, over at the NHL, you have four games tonight, all four in progress. With 10-12 left in the third period, the Devils over the Tampa Bay Lightning 4-3. In the second period over in Chicago, the Anaheim Mighty Ducks.
It's just the Ducks now. They dropped the Mighty.
I like the Mighty.
But that's because you're a Disney kind of guy. They had to drop the Mighty because Disney no longer owns the team.
Gotcha. I understand. They're up on the Blackhawks 1-0.
And that's a premier game. Anaheim Chicago they're the two top teams in the Western Conference, and the three games that they've had so far this year have just been wonderful games throughout.
Dallas is up on Minnesota 2-1, and you know, it's funny, too, because you would think on Friday night they would have more of an NHL schedule. But I guess because of the lockout, Friday night ends up being a very, very tough night.
The NHL really loads up on Sunday games because that's the contract day that they have with NBC and the NBC Sports Network.
Right, and not only that, but NBC wants something to counter the NBA on ABC.
Right.
So, but the problem is, I don't think NBA fans are casual hockey fans. And I think hockey fans are obviously, like, I think hockey fans are bitter towards NBA because NHL sort of looks down at the NBA because it's more of a one-on-one. It's turned into a one-on-one sport.
Yeah. Sorry, I was actually just confirming a second guest for us tonight. We will be joined by former NHL player. He played for the Philadelphia Flyers and Colorado Avalanche. We've done work with him on the website before. We'll be joined by Sean Podine at 10:45.
Excellent. Well, right now, let's welcome the coach of, I guess, of ESPN's NFL team, the coach, Herman Edwards. Coach, how are you tonight?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Coach, Randy Zellia and Ryan Stern here. I guess the first question is, the first two questions are, one, did anybody give you a contract extension today, and are you going to be playing or trying out for playing quarterback for the Jets this year?
No, I guess that's a hoax question, but I guess everyone's concerned about Tony Romo, and Tony Romo was in position, but obviously the Dallas Cowboys had to make sure they solidify that quarterback position, and Tony Romo's the guy they want to go with, and he's the future of this football team, so he was awarded a nice lucrative contract.
Hey, Herm, you know, it's amazing that the NFL season ended, of course, at the Super Bowl, and now we are the NFL offseason seems to be another type of the season for the NFL. It keeps the fans interested. What are your take on how big the NFL offseason has got?
Well, it's become an event, obviously, after the Super Bowl. The next thing the fans understand is going to be the combine. Then after the combine, free agency starts. And I think if you're a fan of any team, you look forward to free agency. And there's been some teams that have done their due diligence and were able to go out and get some players so that they don't feel like they're forced to really pick a player that they don't want to have to pick in the draft, especially when you can fill some needs in free agency, and that's part of it. Some clubs don't do that. You look at the Green Bay Packers, they kind of say that. They're a team that believes in building through the draft, and there's other teams. You look at the Kansas City Chiefs. They provided themselves with a host of players. So it's just according to how you're built and what you feel is right and how you want to do it, and that's what makes it so interesting.
Coach, Ryan Stern here. If you had to pick a team that has really won the offseason so far, which team would you give that offseason champion reward to so far?
Well, you can't win on paper. Basically, and I just think that when you get into that, you're really trying to say, you know, this team is one on paper, and I actually think it's this. I think every team has their needs. You look at the Seattle Seahawks; they ended the season obviously needing some pass rushers. They were able to do that. They got Cliff Avril, they got Brian, and then they also went out and traded for Percy Harvin to get a dynamic player. So they put themselves in pretty good position right now to go into the draft and feel like they don't have to reach on any players. So, you know, every team is different. And to sit here and say on paper this team is one, they don't win on paper. You know, paper doesn't matter. It's when the season starts. And the great thing about it, now you have a draft. And this is a draft that's very deep defensively with offensive linemen on the other side of the ball. So I just think it's a draft that the first two or three rounds, there's going to be a lot of good players that come off the board.
Coach, go ahead, Ryan. I apologize. Go ahead.
Speaking of the draft, I guess the consensus number one overall so far that everyone is talking about is Luke Joeckel.
Yes.
Is there somebody in the first round that not so many people are talking about right now? Is there someone that has really caught your eye?
Well, when you look at the first round, it really boils down to this. There's a group of offensive linemen. You think about the tackle position. Fisher's a guy that a lot of people are looking at. Do you take Fisher or Jake Local from Texas? Do you look at a defensive tackle? There's a bunch of defensive tackles that are sitting there on the board. I think the thing that you realize is this: not a lot of people are talking about the quarterbacks. And when you look at the quarterbacks, Geno Smith, for instance, he's a guy that going into this draft earlier a month ago, he was a guy considered maybe a mid-pick, where Barkley obviously was held to a little bit higher esteem. Now you see both those guys kind of climbing up the board. They're talking some teams, maybe Geno Smith might be gone in the top six picks. So that becomes interesting, because the one thing we do know, if you need a quarterback, and even if you have to reach on him, that's okay, because if you don't have one, you're not going to be very successful. So you look at him, you look at Matt Barkley. Matt Barkley had a pretty good workout, and so now his stock has risen a little bit. Is it risen in the top 10? I doubt that. But there are some teams that are interested in. You know, Jacksonville had a big contingent of folks that went out there to watch him work out. He could be a guy that Jacksonville's eyeing, either in the first round or the top of the second, because, as we know, they have the first pick in the second round. So those are the positions that, when you really look at it, is the quarterback position. We say this is not a deep draft for quarterbacks, but as we know, there will be five or six of them that go within the first two rounds, and one of those or two of them are going to be pretty good players.
Coach, it's, you know, we're talking about the off season too, and we're up here in the New York metropolitan area. Before we even touch on the Jets, we have to talk about the New York Giants. The Victor Cruz situation, I wanted to get your take on it. Do you think teams are hesitant to sign any type of offer sheet to Victor Cruz, considering the first-round tender? If he signs, the Giants get a first-round pick. Are there teams that are worried about that clause?
Well, that's a lot to give up, and I think the Giants have done their due diligence. They know that. When you put a first-round tender on a guy, you just feel like a team really has to want him awfully bad. Now, some team could make a run late before the draft. You never know, but I think at this point in time, the Giants feel like they'll get something done. I personally think they will get something done. I don't think Cruz will leave. I think he will be a part of the Giants football team this year. And that's the chance you take, though, when you sit there and you know, hey, they can offer this, they can offer that. But you sit, and the Giants have a certain way of how they do things. I mean, this organization is built a certain way. They don't seem to panic. They understand what they need to do to get players and how to keep players. And I do, as I said earlier, I do believe that Cruz will be a part of the Giants organization.
Were you a little surprised that they cut players like Ahmad Bradshaw, Mike Boley, and Chris Canty?
No, I was not. That's just kind of the Giants. They have a certain way about going about their business, and they really don't concern themselves with what other people think. They have a plan. The Giants always seem to have a plan. They were a team last year, finished 9-7. You know, when you look at their football team, they fell short in a couple of areas. Obviously, at one point in time, they weren't very consistent running the football, and defensively, the back end of the defense at times gave up a lot of big plays. I think they need some help at linebacker and at the defensive line. So we'll have to wait and see, but the Giants will have a plan. They methodically kind of go through the draft and pick players that they feel fit in their systems on offense and defense, and that's why they've been so consistent over the years, too.
Now, you go from a team that normally does have a plan like the Giants to a team where you're sort of searching for one every now and then with the Jets. Where do you see them going for the rest of free agency and with the draft, especially with the salary cap mess that they're in?
Well, they're like the problem. They're a little bit behind the eight ball with money. And so with that being said, John Isaac is a guy that I worked with down in Tampa, and he's not going to be a big free agent guy. And I think Woody Johnson doesn't want to dabble in free agency. John Isaac believes in building your football team through the draft, so this is why, you know, their best player, Revis, is out there and probably will get traded before the draft, to be quite honest. And then from there, they'll go about in picking players and trying to build their football team. And there's a lot of needs that they need. And John Isaac will have a plan along with the people that are in that organization, and they'll go about their business.
Now, I know you say you work closely with John Isaac, and a lot of word is going around that he's a big salary cap guy and hasn't done too much with the personnel side of things. Do you think that he'll be able to take grasp of the personnel side of things and lead this team
in the right direction?
Well, yeah, I think so. I think given a chance, and he realizes that. You know, he's got about a – he's going to have a two-year window of trying to get this team back into prominence. They understand there's some needed positions that they have to fortify themselves with, one being having the quarterback, whoever that may be, whether it's Sanchez or whoever it may be, Garrard, or if they draft one, we don't know yet, to make sure that position alone is going to play consistently. Then when you look at their offense, they need a tight end. In my opinion, they need somebody in the middle of the field that can help the quarterback. Then you got to create a system where he can be successful, and I think that's critical. They need some offensive linemen, as we know, on the defensive side of it. They need a guy that can get after the quarterback. They need some linebacker help. They lost a couple of the safeties, so they're going to look at the back end of their defense. So this is work in progress. This is not a quick fix. John is not going to panic. He's going to go about and do what he can to help the football team.
Coach, we have a question here from one of our listeners, from Frank Nash. He wants to know how the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to rebound from last season.
Well, obviously injuries cost them a lot if they can stay healthy, but they're a little bit older in the tooth. It'll be interesting to see how they go about doing what they need to do to fill some positions. They lost some guys this offseason, as we know. They've gotten old at the linebacker position. The secondary needs to be addressed. They need a consistent running game, I think, for Ben. I think a lot of those offensive linemen will come back. Pittsburgh seems like to be a team that they're always going to be pretty solid. Injuries played a big factor on them. And they're playing in the division now with Cincinnati. If you look at it, I think Cincinnati did a great job on the offseason basically re-signing their players. Didn't dabble a whole lot in free agency, but really re-signed the guys they needed to keep. And that's a young football team. So I think Cincinnati right now has the edge in that division.
Also, how about the defending NFC champion San Francisco 49ers? Some of the moves that they're making, it looks like they're really more just filling in a little bit of cracks here and there, not really making a lot of major roster overhaul to try and repeat.
Well, they lost a couple players. They got Bolden, the big receiver, and they have a lot of draft picks. I think they'll be very active in the draft when you have that many picks at your disposal. And they've got a good football team. They need some secondary help. They need another rusher. The one thing you realize is during the playoffs, they weren't very good getting after the quarterback, and their secondary got a little exposed. This was a team that only gave up 17 points during the season and 27 points in playoff competition. But they're a very solid football team. They've done a great job with drafting personnel. They have a young football team. But they're playing in a division now that's going to be very competitive. We know the Seattle Seahawks are another very good team, and the Rams obviously had some things go their way last year. They actually had the best division record. In that conference, they'll continue to get better. And then Arizona's a team that we know can play defense in the NFC West, and if they can solidify the quarterback position with Bruce Arians now taking over, they'll be very competitive also.
Now, with the 49ers, they have Colin Kaepernick, and you're starting to see with the Russell Wilsons and all the success that rookie or first-year quarter or second-year quarterbacks are having in the league now. What do you think the strategy, or why do you think the strategy has changed from really taking a quarterback, letting him sit for 2 or 3 years, letting him develop, but now just letting them step right into the fire, and they're performing at such a higher level than anyone has ever seen before?
Well, I think coaches are realizing that it's not so much about their system anymore. It's a system that fits the quarterback skill set. And some of the guys you've mentioned have been very good players. Now, what we saw last year, we haven't seen this in quite some time. You have three rookie quarterbacks take their teams to the playoffs. I mean, that's a historical feat. That's something you're not going to see every year. So we can't always feel like that if you draft a rookie quarterback, you're going to take right to the playoffs, because that's not always the outcome. But the three guys last year set a high bar. But here again, when you think about Russell Wilson, he went to a team that was built through the draft and a very strong offensive line, good run game, outstanding defense, only giving up 15 points a game and not allowing you to score on them, and that always helps a young quarterback. They were third in the league rushing the football. You look at San Francisco, when Kaepernick entered the game, they were also very built the same way, as they ran the ball very well, had a good defense, good kicking game. Andrew Luck was unique in this sense. He had to carry the load, and that's what you felt about Andrew Luck when they drafted him. He was good enough to carry the load. This is a guy, his rookie year, won 7 games in the fourth quarter. He brought his teams back. So he's a unique guy. But this was a unique class of quarterbacks, and it's one that we'll talk about 10 years from now, saying maybe this is one of the better classes you've ever witnessed play their rookie years.
Herb, can you talk about, since you were a head coach, about what the coach's life is like during the off season? Can you give our listeners just a brief insight what type of scheduling the coaches usually have during this time?
Right about now, you're sitting, and obviously you're having a bunch of mock drafts. You're going to have an opportunity to bring 30 players to your campus that you can interview. You're talking about trades. You're going to look at your board and you know, go through, if this guy is here, will we take him? Are we willing to move down? All the scenarios you're going to try to create before the draft. You still have almost a month before that takes place. You're going to take phone calls about maybe some players you want to move or some players that want to be moved. There's a lot of conversation going on with a lot of different football teams behind closed doors. And then your coaches are in there watching tape on players. You're going to set your board in this way. There's going to be certain players you're going to take off the board. You're going to put over them, put red flags on them, whether it be due to injury or off-field issues. You're only going to deal with these guys a certain round. Some guys, you won't deal with them at all. And so that's a part of the process between now and draft day.
Coach, with draft day, a little bit of insight. How long does it take for you personally, because I know how styling you are, how long does it take for you to pick out your suit and match your socks with it?
It's not that difficult. I just think that, draft day is an important day for the organization, for your football team, along with the fans. The fans follow the draft. It has become an event, and rightly so, because that's the lifeblood of your football team. And when you can draft well, when you do a good job, those players are going to be in your program for 4 years. And that's the foundation of the draft. Free agency is another avenue to go about getting players. But truly, the teams that continue to have success are the ones that build through the draft. And it's very important. It really is. It's the lifeblood. And young players are the new stars of the league. And you got to get it right. And there's a lot that goes into this. You have scouts that have watched these guys for 2 or 3 years. And this is where your scouting program and the guys that work on the road, the guys that travel all those miles and watch these guys, they collect background. They know everything about this guy. And you're going to invest. This guy's an investment. And you got to try to get it right. You don't always get it right. But for the majority of it, it's a process that you enjoy being a part of.
Coach, I wanted to ask your opinion about the Miami Heat's 27-game win streak. Being involved in this industry, how amazing was this streak, and can you give your feelings about watching this?
Well, I think it was historic. I don't know if anybody else will see that, even get to 27 again. And I think sometimes we lose sight of that, how difficult it is to win a game, period, at any level, whether it be football, basketball. I mean, to win that many games in a row, to know that every time you go out there and you have a streak going, you're going to get the best out of the opponent, and it is draining, and it's a lot of pressure on these guys, and I thought the Miami Heat handled it very well. You see tonight after they lost, I thought the key was this, after they did lose the game, to not lose two in a row, and they came back tonight, and I think they're getting after them a little bit, and this is the team that's talking about trying to win another championship. I mean, the streak is one thing. That was a way to really make the season kind of interesting for them down the stretch. But their ultimate goal, obviously, is to win a championship. And they've got the best player in basketball playing for them, LeBron James. And I think we've watched him develop over the last 3 or 4 years after him leaving Cleveland, making the decision. A lot of people questioned, was he mentally tough to win games in the fourth quarter and all those things. And I think he's really done a great job of staying true to himself. He's fun to watch. That team is fun to watch. And they're going to be tough to beat in the playoffs.
Would you be surprised if he opted out of his contract and ended up back in Cleveland?
That wouldn't surprise me. He might even end up in L.A. Most great players do. They end up in Los Angeles. So we'll have to wait and see. But I think he likes his players that he plays with at the Heat, and you know, this team is, they can make a run. I mean, they can make a run, you know, two or three more years. I mean, they're not old, and it'll be very interesting what his decision is, but I think I know this, whoever he plays for, you're going to have a chance to win a championship with the guy.
One more from me, Coach. Speaking of LeBron James, do you think that he would be able to play in the NFL if he ever decided to?
Well, I think it's a little bit passing by now. I mean, why would he want to do that? I think he's one of the greatest basketball players that will ever play this game. And you know, we make light of it. We say, well, is he going to be better than Michael Jordan? I don't know that. But I know one thing. He's pretty good right now, boy. And we're witnessing something I think we take for granted. You know, I think we marvel at these guys because they make it look really easy. It's very difficult what this guy's doing. I mean, he's a professional basketball player. He's playing against other professionals. He makes things look very easy. And he's fun to watch. I mean, guys like this come along every 20 years or so. We watch Michael Jordan through his span. Now we're watching this guy. And obviously, in his younger days, if he decided to be a football player, he has the body to be a football player. He has enough talent and athletic skills to be a football player. But he chose basketball.
Coach, I want to thank you very much for taking a few minutes tonight on this Friday night to join us. You know, we can't thank you enough. Really appreciate it. Herm, do you have anything coming up that you'd like to let us know, like charity events or any upcoming speaking engagements you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, well, I've always got a couple O's, but basically, I'm like everybody else. I'm working, trying to figure out what teams are going to draft, what players, and it's coming up here pretty soon. So it'll be interesting. This draft is always fun to watch these young players come off the board and then watch them develop. Some guys start off very fast. Some guys, it takes 2 or 3 years. But these are the new stars, these kids that are being drafted, and they're worthy. Some of them take a little bit longer to develop, but we're going to watch a new crop of stars come into the National Football League. A lot of fun.
Thanks, Coach. We really appreciate the time tonight.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Coach.
You know what's funny is we probably could have kept him on the phone for like another 20 minutes, and I still would have been like, he's right.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
He's like, he's right. Like, you know, it's funny too. Like when I asked him about the Miami Heat stuff too, it was sort of the answers I was expecting from him, but it was he was dead on. And I do think that the Miami Heat are in a real tough situation because I think they want it. You know what I mean? In fact, I know they want it.
Yeah.
They want to win. They want it. They want to do this in a way where it's competitive, and I think that they can win another championship this year. I think, like every defiant superstar, because if you remember when Michael Jordan came in the league, you know, when it was during that Magic Larry time. It was during that period of time, and it was so. Like, Michael, you know, this guy's never going to win a championship. This guy's never going to win a championship. And you find yourself rooting against him, and then eventually you stop rooting against him because he sort of has that spot, like you want to root for him. How many people do you know during that time when Michael was in his prime that people were, towards the end of his career, people were rooting for him because they wanted to see greatness continue? Unless you're Knicks fans, and then you were supposed to and you
right.
want to see them.
I, growing up, I was a big Knicks fan, really up through the late 90s, up until the end of the Jordan era. And I don't know if that has anything to do with it, that when the Jordan era ended, that's when I stopped really following the NBA as much as I did. But I was never a big Michael Jordan guy. I never rooted for him. I always rooted against him. I never really liked seeing him win, but that never stopped me from respecting him. I think I have more respect for Michael when he was playing than I do for LeBron right now. But I do think that the Heat are in a tough situation because I really think the only way that they won't get murdered in the media is if they win the championship. It has to be an NBA championship for them, or else it'll be a failure.
Well, yeah, and that's not that the Yankees win every single year, but that's sort of the way the Yankees are. If the Yankees don't win every single year, the season is considered a disappointment. And the Miami Heat are now taking that attitude. I don't think you can take that attitude in the NFL because I don't think there's a team that's consistent enough like the Lakers, like the Miami
I really think that free agency plays more into effect with the NFL. I think that quarterbacks are the main reason, because once quarterbacks get good, they demand so much money, it's tough to pay the rest of the team. And that's what you saw with the Baltimore Ravens this year. They win the championship. They have to pay Joe Flacco all the money. Everyone else is gone because they can't afford him.
Yeah. Congratulations. You won the Super Bowl. Mr. Flacco, we're going to give you more money. That's great. How about my boys over here? We can't.
Yeah. So I think that it's tough when there are so many people to pay in the NFL for consistency to really last as long as a team can last in the NBA. You also see that for superstars, lifespans or average playing time in the NBA is almost double that of what it is in the NFL, only because of the sheer physicality that nobody can keep it up for as long as some of these NBA players do. But you have Jason Kidd. When you watch Jason Kidd on the floor, he looks old, but he's still able to play. You can't look old in the NFL and still be able to play.
Right, and Jason's able to adjust. You know, Jason's not going to be running up and down the floor like he was 8 years ago, going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Jason's now going to be playing more of a half-court game. He's playing only 15 to 20 minutes. And he's got a reduced role because he's understanding he's the age of 40. And there's a lot of players who won't make that adjustment. It's just you don't really find it. Listen, Michael Jordan came back to play with the Washington Wizards, and Michael Jordan was trying to be the Michael Jordan that we saw all those years in Chicago. He was able to do it for a small amount of point during the regular seasons, but then his age kicked him in. And it just didn't work.
Right.
It just doesn't work that way. So, the simple fact of the matter is there's going to be a time where LeBron James and the Miami Heat, people still look at them like they're the villains, but they're not really the villains anymore. There's going to be a point where they're going to start getting that sympathetic vote. When the Boston Celtics put the big three together, Pierce, Allen, and Garnett, but unless you were in Boston, nobody really cared for that team. Nobody really wanted to see that team win. Everybody thought that team was put together, and it was an unbalance in the NBA. And the amazing thing, too, is a lot of people don't realize is during that playoff year, LeBron and Cleveland almost knocked them out of the second round of the playoffs. The,
right.
People don't talk about that part of it, and that's just a little annoying point. With all that being said, though, there's going to be a point where, just like the Celtics were so unloved during the beginning of that Big Three era, they became the sympathetic figures. And last year, that same crew was getting cheered to take down the Miami Heat. So if Miami can keep this core together and stay patient, they might get to that point where they get that they're no longer the hated Miami Heat, and they'll start having the sympathetic feel to them, because there'll be something else happening there. Does that make sense? I hope I'm making sense with this.
Yeah, no, I definitely see exactly what you're coming from. And before we get in a little bit more into this, we have to talk about what just happened in the NCAA tournament. Michigan down 3 with 5 seconds to go, Trey Burke hits about a 30-foot three-pointer to tie it up, and Michigan wins in overtime. So for all you Kansas Jayhawk fans or anybody who had Kansas going and winning it all or going to the Final Four, you can blame me for putting the Kansas Jinx on that by already proclaiming them the victors.
Yeah, Michigan State right now is down 15-14 to Duke. Listen, I there's one team that seems we're not really talking about much in this tournament right now. It is the Duke Blue Devils.
Duke, and that's so unlike almost every other year. I'm a Duke guy, and I always hear all of the chatter from everybody who is part of the anti-Duke crowd. For some reason, I don't know if it's because they didn't win the ACC regular season or the ACC tournament and that they're coming in as a 2 and not a 1, or that they don't have the superstar player that they always have. But you're right, nobody is talking about Duke. And I think that Krzyzewski is loving it because he can focus on his team and not the media.
You know what's amazing too with Duke? Yes, college basketball has had to take a hit and a step back because of the one-and-done rule. And it's hard to build a consistency with college basketball. But somehow Krzyzewski is able to get that out of his guys, man.
And what Krzyzewski tends to find, I mean, you do find the one or two guys once in a while. You have the Kyrie Irvings, you have the Luol Dangs. But even in this age of players coming out after 1 year, he finds those guys that stay 4 years. And that's one of the reasons why Duke is so successful all the time, is because you find quality basketball players who are more physically gifted and older and mature than some of these 18-year-olds.
Yeah, I agree with that, too. I think some of the best coaches in college basketball, like Rick Pitino, Bobby Knight, who's no longer coaching, Bobby is something else. Bobby is a guy who I think we should try and get him on here. And if we had him on here, all I have to do is just ask a question, and he'll go for 20 minutes.
Oh, that's it?
I love that. I love that about Bobby Knight, too. You know, it's funny too. You know, we discuss it, and the thing with Krzyzewski is he had the opportunity to go pro. I don't blame him for not taking an NBA job, because if you take an NBA job, you're giving up that legacy you put in Duke.
Right.
And that's a hell of a legacy.
That, and it's pretty tough to get paid more than he's getting paid at Duke. He is an absolute god in Durham. It doesn't really get any... I mean, he has the court named after him. It's the Coach K court. Like I said, it's tough to get paid more. And also, I mean, like you said, with the legacy, it's tough to, he's wanted there. I mean, he has a lifetime contract with the university. So pretty much he's there until he retires. And that's just a sense of loyalty that's tough to turn your back on.
My question to you, And then we'll move on for this. Do you believe at the end of the day, Krzyzewski can win 1 to 2 more titles?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he may win it this year. I mean, you have 2 number one seeded teams that got knocked out so far. In fact, 3 number one seeded teams that have Kansas lost, Gonzaga lost, Louisville is in, and I'm blanking on who the other number one seed is. But Georgetown is out. They were a two. Miami is out. They were a two. They're one of the top-rated teams left in the tournament. I think that this is, I mean, their bracket is by far the hardest bracket for anyone to get through. They have Louisville coming up, or the winner of the Michigan State Duke game tonight gets Louisville, who is the number one overall team in the tournament. So I think right now the team that comes out of that bracket may be the favorite to win it all.
That's the NCAA tournament. You know, you just never know. The year Syracuse won with Carmelo Anthony played a few years back, no one saw them coming. Indiana was heavily favored to win this year. Syracuse.
Oh, that's right, Indiana. So you're right. So that's three number one seeds that are out.
Yeah, so, you know, it's one of those things to be keeping in mind and keeping your eye on through the rest of the tournament. The other thing that we discussed with him, you know, we didn't really go too much as far as insulting the Jets. I think people were more expecting us to go at the Jets like it was no one's business. I think we're now also at a point where the Jets are tired of the circus reputation, even though they put themselves in that situation. I think they're tired of it, and now they're at a point where they want to sort of pick up the pieces. Herm, I think, is pretty confident that this is going to be a down year for them, but they are going to bounce back at a certain point to sort of turn the ship.
Right, and I think one thing that Herm said was he knows that it's going to take a lot and that it's going to take a while. Whether or not they hit home runs or grand slams in the draft, which the Jets haven't proved to do over the past couple of years, but even if they do hit home runs in the draft, they still have so many holes to fill with quality players. You don't have 9 first-round draft picks. I know they're looking to acquire another first-round draft pick, but that will come at the cost of Darrell Revis. And he seemed pretty sure that Darrell Revis was going to be traded by draft time, which doesn't make sense to me from a Jets standpoint, because they had to pay the roster bonus already, and it makes no sense to pay somebody if he's not going to be on your roster.
He's pretty sure that Victor Cruz has a home for next season as well.
Right.
And I sort of agree. I just don't see a team making an offer to him. And it's a shame, too, because, listen, Victor Cruz is a fun player to watch, a great wide receiver. I don't know if we should be using the word great with him yet, but he's a good wide receiver. I think we're now at a point where if he doesn't get a contract by the draft, it's not happening. No team really wants to give away a first-round draft pick for a wide receiver that does, you know, again, like we said on this show, I'm sorry, but a guy who on this same show, we've said multiple times, there are multiple players out there who are just like him who can do what he does for a cheaper price.
Right. To me, the biggest reason why nobody is signing him isn't that it's going to cost a first-round draft pick. Because if it just cost a first-round draft pick, I think he's a better wide receiver than anyone that's in the draft this year. It's the fact that someone's going to have to give up a first-round draft pick and then pay him the money that he's requesting. Because the Giants are going to match anything up to $6 million a year, which they've already offered. So that means a team would have to pay him in excess of $6 million a year and give up the first-round draft pick. I think it's the combination of the two that will allow him to stay at least this year. Reports are that he has already turned down a 5-year, $30 million contract with half of the money being guaranteed. If you put that contract in front of me, I know I don't have the skill that Victor Cruz has, and I'm not in the frame of mind to think that I'm worth more. But if you're putting a $30 million contract in front of my face, I'm signing it.
You want my honest opinion about that? You put a $2 million contract in front of me, I'm signing it.
It depends on what that opinion is.
Yeah. Again, you just put a certain amount of money in front of my face, I'll be putting it in. You know, I'll be like, all right. you don't have to tell me twice.
right.
No, listen, at the end of the day, Victor Cruz has a decision to make. And I think for his sake, re-signing that deal with the Giants, there's definitely a possibility. You know, I was talking with Gary Casper, who's a coordinator here. He's an analyst with us for NFL during the NFL season. We were discussing this the other day, and we both said the exact same thing. We both said there's a good possibility that Cruz might be, you know, screwing himself out of money. He might be screwing himself out of money. He might be, by turning down the deal from the Giants now, he might be taking money off the table because there may not be people who are going to offer him that type of money. And if he does not have a good year this year, he's done.
Right. He's putting himself in the same situation that Joe Flacco put himself in last year. Flacco had the tender. He had a contract offer of below what he thought he was worth, and he said, I'm going to go out and prove it this year. I'll play it my 1 year, and I'll prove that you should be paying me more. He got lucky, and he went on and won the Super Bowl. So I think Victor Cruz is putting himself in the same situation where now he has to go out and not have the year that he had this past year. He has to have the year that he had his rookie year and more, which is going to be tough because that's one of the – it was the best season that a wide receiver had in Giants history. So he's putting that on the line if he decides to turn down this offer and just sign the tender.
By the way, I just want to let you know, I'm on Facebook right now, and I'm looking around while we're talking, and there's a big thing from the New York Knicks. The Knicks continue to out-muscle their opponents. Can we say seven? Okay. The Knicks
which is now the longest winning streak in the NBA.
Well, here's the best part. First off, I don't want to hear about the winning streaks when the Knicks are playing the likes of the Charlotte Bobcats. You beat the Charlotte, one of the worst teams in the NBA, and you were up 20-something points, and you win by 9. Your final score was a 111-102, the Knicks over the Bobcats. And they have a picture of J.R. Smith posing with a big thing under it saying, Knicks defeat Bobcats. You cannot put that online. That is disgraceful. You are supposed to beat the Bobcats. Do not post these things online like that. I think that's dumb. This is one of those games. It's a must win for New York. It is for just for your reputation's sake. Oh my God!
Yeah.
It's
tell us how you really feel.
No, it's, you know what it is. It's, listen, I know where the NBA is geared towards. They're gonna have to. You're not gonna sit there see the Bobcats, all the big things sitting there saying Bobcats lose, Bobcats lose, because that happens every game. Listen. The simple fact of the matter is the New York Knicks need to – this is the same franchise, and I know you're a Rangers guy, so it's run by the same management. But the Knicks didn't make the playoffs with the exception of the 1 year with Stephon Marbury where they got swept by the Nets. So they went long –
Oh, you had to throw that in, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Well,
that felt good for you to say.
With the Stephon Marbury part or the fact that the Nets swept them?
About the Nets sweeping them.
The Nets sweeping the Knicks. But you're telling me, so they get swept by Boston during the 2010-2011 playoffs. So they don't win a game. So, okay.
Didn't they break the record for most consecutive playoff losses? They set the record for 13 when they went down 3-0 to the Heat last year.
Yes. So you're win one playoff game. How embarrassing is it to see during this celebration, because you won one playoff game in 13 years, or even longer than that, and you have confetti coming down from Madison Square Garden. You're still down in the series 3-1.
3-1, yeah.
That's embarrassing.
Yes, I 100% agree. It was a joke that they put so much into one win. But I think that one win sort of gave them, I don't know if it gave them a little momentum where they said, okay, this is a team that walked through the rest of the NBA on the way to the title. We haven't won a game in 13 where we proved that we can at least fight with them once. And if we can fight with them once, maybe we'll be able to fight with them next year. And they came out at the beginning of this year and they were on fire. They started 18-5. And in those 18 wins, two of them were against the Heat, one in Miami. So
okay. But I have to ask you, you want us to take this organization seriously. You want us to say this team is a championship contender. You want us to say that, you know, they're good, they're the real deal. You want us to say they're one of the top, you want us to say, okay, here's the Miami Heat, who's the next best team. You want us to say the New York Knicks. Then do not celebrate wins against the Charlotte Bobcats by posting
pictures. Yeah, but that's social media. That has nothing to do with the Knicks. Yeah, it's governed by the Knicks, but a social media thing, I have no problem with them putting a headline that they beat the Bobcats, because they put up headlines every night, even when they lose. So I don't have as big a problem with that as you do with the Knicks this year in the playoffs. I think that it's a down year if they lose to anybody except the Heat. I think that if they get to the Eastern Conference Finals and lose to the Heat, I think they're okay with it. If somehow they fall to the four and have to play the Heat in the second round and lose to the Heat in the second round, I think they're okay with it. If they were to lose to an Atlanta, a Boston, or even dare say the Nets, which, by the way, I think this year, if you see a Knick-Net playoff series, I think it's going to be blood.
I agree. By the way, really quickly, we have finals for tonight. Let's really quickly go over these. Like we said earlier, Washington fell to Orlando 97-92. The Celtics beat Atlanta 118-107, Battle of Eastern Conference playoff teams. We're discussing the Knicks-Charlotte game, 111-102. That was in New York. Toronto over Detroit 99-82. Philly over Cleveland 97-87. The Grizzlies beat the Rockets 103-94. Miami trounces the Hornets 108-89. And the Oklahoma City Thunder fall to the Minnesota Timberwolves 101-93. Games currently in progress. The San Antonio Spurs have a 93-86 lead over the Los Angeles Clippers. And the Brooklyn Nets trailing big to the Denver Nuggets 61-40. And just in the first quarter, still just finishing up the first quarter, the Portland Trail Blazers leading the Utah Jazz 25-22. Ryan, do you have the college basketball scores?
Yes, I do. Well, first, we have the NHL scoreboard. The Tampa Bay Lightning score two late goals, including one with 16 seconds left, and then they win in a shootout against the Devils 5-4. With 13 minutes left in the third, Anaheim-Chicago, which I said earlier is a premier matchup, they're tied at one. You have the Dallas Stars beating the Minnesota Wild, the third period just underway in Dallas. And in Calgary, you have the Flames trailing the Blue Jackets by a score of 3-2, almost the end of the second period. In the NCAA tournament, you have Louisville beating Oregon in a 1-12 matchup. You have the Michigan Wolverines shocking the Kansas Jayhawks with the late three-pointer by Trey Burke and then winning in overtime, 87-85. Right now you have Duke beating Michigan State 28-22 with 4 minutes left in the first. And because of the overtime between Kansas and Michigan, you have Florida and Florida Gulf Coast set to tip off in about 2 minutes.
All right. Also, spring training baseball. The Mets beat the Cardinals 7-2 today. The Detroit Tigers over the Tampa Bay Rays 8-3. Minnesota over Boston 8-3. Baltimore over the. I guess Baltimore had an inner scrimmage game today. They won 6-1. The Yankees over the Nationals 4-2. The Yankees are just getting ravaged by injuries.
Yeah, they're having a bad spring training so far. When it comes to off the field with the injuries, when it comes to on the field, they have one of the worst records in all of baseball. I know you can't really put anything into record during spring training, but you don't have a lot of people doing anything so far this year with the Yankees.
You also have the Kansas City Royals over the Cleveland Indians 5-1, and the Blue Jays over the Phillies 1-0. Game still in progress. The Texas Rangers over the Padres 5-3, and that's in the top of the eighth. The White Sox over the Brewers 6-2 right now at the bottom of the seventh. Chicago over Houston 6-5, and the bottom of the fourth, it's 0-0. Arizona and Cincinnati, same thing with San Francisco and Oakland, and that's the top of the second. And the Dodgers and the Angels are 1-0 Angels in the bottom of the first. Man, I'm doing these baseball scores right now, man. It's gonna be a long summer. it's gonna be a real long summer.
Well, that's right, because because of the lockout, you'll have the NHL going into July, and nothing says summer like ice hockey.
Yeah. That's pretty much what we were saying this year, too. I had to be reminded at some point, like, hey, don't forget we have NHL. Like, really? Really? that's where we're at. Real quick, before we jump back into a regular topic, a little piece of sad news. For those who don't, no, I'm a really, really, really big WWE fan. I've always been for a long time. And anybody knows who Nature Boy Ric Flair is. Ric Flair received
Woo!
Devastating. There's no wooing today. Ric Flair's son, Reed Flair, passed away at the age of 25 years old today. Our heartfelt condolences go out to the Flair family because, you know, they're listening to this show right now. And,
Maybe someone tweeted it to him that we were going to be on, and he clicked on it.
Yeah, it says here.
Do you think Ric Flair is tweeting?
I don't think Ric Flair can tweet. I think he's too old. I think he'll finally learn how to use email the other day. That's what I heard. They said the Charlotte Police Department has confirmed that Reed Flair, the 25-year-old son of legendary wrestler Ric Flair, was found dead in a Charlotte hotel. According to a press release issued by the police, officers received a call from a service in reference to an unresponsive individual at a room at the residence in South Park. Police identified the person as Richard Flair, his real name, and he was pronounced dead. Police say there didn't appear to be any foul play involved at death. Ric Flair's agent, Melinda Morrisani of Legacy Talent and Entertainment, issued a statement on Facebook. We are heartbroken to confirm that Rick's son, Reed Flair, had passed away today, March 29, 2013, in Charlotte, North Carolina. The investigation into the cause of death is ongoing. Reed was 25 and an incredible son, brother, friend, and professional wrestler. No words can describe the grief that Rick and his family are experiencing, and they do request privacy during this devastating time. A day before his death, Reed wrote a message on Twitter announcing he would be appearing in Maryland this weekend for an independent wrestling show. Two shows in Maryland this weekend with Ric Flair and Nature Boy. Good wrestling, even better times ahead, he wrote. So you can start speculating now on what it was. If you want my opinion, I think that we are now at a point where everything is under a microscope. I had the pleasure of talking with the five-time WCW champion Booker T.
That was only five times.
Okay, I'm sorry. Five-time WCW champion Booker T. Better? Do you feel a little bit better?
Yeah, much better.
Okay, good. I'm glad to see you and I are in sync, man. with that being said, I need sleep. With that being said, this is so ridiculous. One of the questions I had talked to Booker T about, and I'm going to cut some of the Booker T interviews so we can play it on the show. It was a 40-minute interview, and I don't want to waste 40 minutes of people's time with me just laughing and talking and BSing with Booker T. But one of the questions that he and I discussed was the Chris Benoit issue, not about the crimes that Chris committed, but the effects of the crimes had on the industry, not in just pro wrestling, but in sports. And because of the Chris Benoit situation, it has forced athletes to want to get checked, get their brains checked, check for brain damage for the sports aspect of football, where these guys are getting nailed even when wearing helmets. The wrestlers with all the chair shots and the abuse of their body,
One thing that gets to me is when people say wrestling is fake. Wrestling is real. It's staged, but it's real. A lot of the things that they have to go through is real. It takes a lot of toll on their bodies.
Yeah, it does, and doesn't ever seem to get any easier. A lot of fans like myself, I understand it's fake, and understand where it's geared towards now. It's not geared towards that 18 to 36 year old demographic anymore. It's going back to the kids. Vince is very smart to do it that way because it makes sense. Would you rather be looking for that immature demographic, or would you rather be gearing it towards kids, not making it too raunchy? The problem is you still have a good fan base of the Attitude Era, as they like to call it. So you still have a good core of your fan base from that time, and when you do that, they're not buying the John Cena. John Cena has now played the role of Hulk Hogan. You know how a John Cena match is going to go. So now you're trying to find the guy who's going to replace Hulk Hogan in that sense. Who do you have? Do you think Randy Orton's that guy? No, I think Randy Orton was playing the role of Macho Man for a little while. Do you think CM Punk is the guy? CM Punk is the anti-superhero. He doesn't want it. He doesn't want to be that. He wants to be himself. CM Punk would fit perfectly in the Attitude Era right now. That's how CM Punk is. I can't believe we're talking wrestling right now. Okay, with that being said, Ryan, who do we have coming up?
Joining us in about 2 minutes, we will have Sean Podine. He is a former NHL player. He played with the Oilers, the Flyers, the Avalanche, the Blues. He's got a lot of things going on with him. I believe he's coaching high school hockey in Minnesota. And for those of you that are into high school sports and know how big high school football is in Texas, that's what high school hockey is in Minnesota, if not more. You had the high school state tournament, and it was selling out NHL arenas. So high school hockey has just been absolutely thriving in Minnesota. He is also founder of the Team 5 Foundation. The Team 5 Foundation is something that we have worked with Backsports Page. It is a great foundation. I'll let Sean get into it as soon as he is with us. And Randy, do we have Sean Podine on the line?
We're going to have him on the line in a minute. We'll tell you that I'm going to be very excited to announce soon that Backsports Page has some really, really, really big interviews coming up, both with Randall Cunningham and possibly some other fun names. Just remember, keep checking out Back Sports page, our Facebook page, facebook.com/backsportspage. Also, you can go to Real Sports Talk. We're going to revamp it. Jose does send his best. We have not had Jose on with us the last couple weeks. He's going through some personal matters. Ryan Stern's been great. He's been a fixture of the show and will be a fixture of the show for a long time. You can follow us all on Twitter at Back Sports Page. We're going to make a Real Sports Talk page Twitter account. I'm just, keep that updated as much as possible. And, of course, if you need to find me, I'm on both Facebook and Twitter. Come on, hit me with it. We'll be glad to, be in communication with you guys as much as we can. And we appreciate you guys every single week checking us out here on Real Sports Talk Radio. Really appreciate it. You guys have been the best. And I believe we have our second guest of the evening, Ryan. If you want to start taking it away, go ahead. Sean, good evening. Randy Zellier, Ryan Stern, Back Sports Page, Real Sports Talk Radio. How are you tonight?
Great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. We're doing great. We thank you for taking a few minutes on this late Friday night to spend some time with us. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. It's not too late here. I'm with the family in Hawaii. We actually fly back later tonight. So for us, it's a 4:45, just watching some college and pro hockey and a nice cloudy day in Oahu.
Wait. So you're in Hawaii right now. you're in Hawaii right now. If you can do me a favor, and if you can bring me back, something awesome from Hawaii, like a hula girl. If you wanted to do that for me, I would be forever in your debt, my friend. Forever in your debt.
It has to stick to the dashboard, and you got to promise not to move it.
So, Sean, tell us what you've been up to lately.
I just finished a season of coaching my kids, coaching some high school hockey, and we just had a long, long winter of a lot of fun, and then we decided to get away as a family for about 10, 12 days, and now we'll head back and start getting the kids back into their sports, the soccer, the hockey, the kung fu, the baseball, all the fun stuff that you get to do as a dad.
I was just telling our listeners that for people that aren't too familiar with high school hockey, that if you're to equivalent high school hockey in Minnesota, it's probably that of high school football in Texas.
Yeah, it's high school football in Texas, it's high school basketball in Indiana, and it's high school hockey in Minnesota where, we don't have a lot of the pay-for-play kind of teams, so kids grow up in their communities, and they play with their friends growing up, and then they usually go to the high school, like 98-99% of the kids go to the local high school. It's changed a little bit over the time because, we have more kids going to play junior hockey, more kids going to play at private schools that can play with better players. But for the most part, we still have just a strong core community for kids to play high school association hockey with the kids they live around.
Sean, there's always a lot of talk when it comes to high school sports and recreational sports. When it comes to hockey, one of the knocks on it is about the gear, the having to wear the, getting the sticks, the protective wear to wear, and it's a very expensive sport to play. As being as involved as hockey for your career, what do you say to those detractors?
You know what? There's two levels, and you're going to have, I truly believe, your what I call pure committed families, which they're in. They're paying for the special programs, the one-on-one teachers. They're skating, 10, 11 months a year. But that's the lower percentage. So what I try to do is base my philosophy on the 98-99% of the kids where you want to play different sports, you want to have a great experience, come into our community. To start you off, we have these bags that we get from different areas that it costs you a minimal amount to play ice hockey, try it out, and see if it's a sport that your child likes. And we don't like to turn any kids away that can't afford it, so we have a strong scholarship program. So we try to increase the numbers as much as possible, especially at the lowest level, the might levels, to get more kids and families introduced to the game itself.
Take us a little bit more in Team 25.
Team 25, we started this, my wife and I, in a group of great volunteer people 15, 16 years ago now, starting this summer. And we just started to raise money for a rare disease called ataxia telangiectasia. Kids would get it. It's a genetic disease. They would show losing motor control about 2 or 3, wheelchair by 8 or 9, and life expectancy was about 18. Well, since we started doing this and working with the AT Children's Project, we have been able to, or I shouldn't say we, the AT Children's Project has lifted awareness of the disease. Kids live now into their upper 20s, early 30s. We're on the map of trying to find the actual gene where this comes from. And the other half of the money that we give out goes, stays in southeastern Minnesota to help kids that are underfunded, that need a lot of, whether it's a hospital room or a hotel room or a bed at night to go to the Mayo Clinic, whatever it might be, just to help out underprivileged, underknown families and diseases.
You're in the Minnesota area. Tell us a little bit about the Minnesota Wild this year.
Well, as my kids are very much into it, I know more about Minnesota Wild hockey now than I did for the last 10 years. it's exciting. It's always fun to see a franchise make an investment in the future like they did this summer with Suter and Parisi. Puts them on the level to compete at the highest level in the NHL. Right now they're on a winning streak. They lost in Dallas tonight. But, you know, it's given that resurgence of kids who watch this team, they don't know about the North Stars, they don't know much about the past, but they see the present in an NHL team that's competing at the highest level, and numbers in the state will increase because of that, and that, I think the Wild franchise has just done a great job.
Can you let us know on how, well, not how, but can you explain why the NHL doesn't really get the media attention, such as like the NBA and Major League Baseball and the NFL?
I think one of the major things is NHL is a here sport. And what I mean by that is you can watch hockey on TV. I mean, you can be down here in Hawaii or South Dakota, or you could be out in New Jersey. You watch it on TV, you don't really understand it. You can't understand why they blew the whistle. You like seeing the guys fight maybe, but you're not really sure why they called that goal back, whatever it is. But once you get to a game, once you sit next to the glass and watch someone hit another guy into the glass or see a goal or feel the excitement. So it's much tougher to get people into the seats in hockey because there's only a certain few areas that have it. Now football, it's almost better to watch on TV when you're at home. You don't sit the timeouts. Baseball, slower game. You can watch it on TV, doze off, golf, all that kind of stuff. But hockey's a very intense, gotta be there, gotta be here kind of game, and that limits the numbers of people who actually get it and want to be part of it.
Give us a little bit of your take on who the top teams are out west besides what you've seen from the Wild.
Out west, I think, you know, you got Anaheim, who's having a I can't believe Solani's still playing. I think he's, what is he, a great-grandpa? He's still one of the best players in our league. But Anaheim's a strong team. Vancouver's a very strong team. You know, Schneider's stepping up in the nets for them. The Wild are very good right now, but they're going to have their first shot at the postseason where they're an over a top team instead of a team that's upsetting someone else. You see Pittsburgh just got to get one. I mean, out east, that's fun to see. They're right now, in my mind, they're the team to beat. Chicago started off hot. Now they're going through a little bit of a win here, lose there kind of a atmosphere. But I think it's just so wide open. And the parity in the NHL, what they've done to create teams that are so similar. And I think last year's playoffs were a great example of that, where I think the Los Angeles Kings got in the last day. I think they won their last game and someone else had to lose. They got in and they win the Stanley Cup. So you can talk about it being a number one seed versus the number eight, but really they're all so close right now. Well, there's not a lot of disparity within the league.
We're up here in the New York metropolitan area. I don't know how many games you've seen from the Devils, defending Eastern Conference champions. do you think that they have a chance of possibly getting back to the Stanley Cup Finals?
Oh, definitely. I mean, they put together one of the top products in the league. The biggest difference that I see right now, and I'll go back to what I was just saying, because I think they lost in the shootout tonight to Tampa Bay, where a friend of mine just got the job. I think he'll do a great job of turning. Cooper will do a great job of turning around Tampa Bay. I mean, immediately. If their big boys buy in, it could be really fun to watch the Lightning. But to talk about the Devils, you know, they had when I was living out in Philly, they had almost a cornerstone on the market as being the team to introduce the trap. And they were that elite team for so long just because the way they were managed and the organization itself is just top-notch. But they're one of those teams a lot like a Minnesota, a lot like maybe a L.A. Kings or maybe a Anaheim. That they're right there, and they're willing to make that investment in the right way to do it. So, they're again, the parity is so close that, yeah, they are not that far away at all from being that top team again, but there's just so many teams at the same level as them now. Where's the biggest difference I see from the late 90s to today?
Now, Sean, I was all set to head down to the Winter Classic last year. Then my daughter decided that she wanted to be born a week early. and she was born the day before you took part in the alumni game. Take us through that experience.
You know, it's funny because last year my kids weren't as into hockey as they are this year. So I went out to the Winter Classic thinking that it was going to be a bunch of old-timers from New York and Philly to just test the ice. No fans, you know, just make sure it was ready to play on. I land. I got Mr. Quinn, who's in the same car as me. They're telling me that there's going to be 50,000 fans to watch a bunch of old-timers go out there and skate on the ice. And I was like, I had my family with me, which was just a great experience. And so we land. We go there. I didn't bring a stick. I didn't bring shoulder pads. I hadn't had my skate sharpened in 2 years. Like, I do hockey camps. I walk on cement. I'm like, I'm going to embarrass myself out here. And the game ended up just being a blast. I stole Jagr's shoulder pads. Mark Recchi borrowed me one of his extra sticks. He came with, like, 3 sticks all ready to go. I was like, Recchi, what's going on here? I just wasn't ready at all for it. Our family just had a blast. It was one of my favorite memories of my career, to be honest. And, you know, I know you guys are out in Jersey, but I say it everywhere I go. Mr. Schneider and Mr. Clark and the organization in Philadelphia, I could not have been luckier and blessed more to play for that organization. And I just I relish every time I get a chance to be part of it.
And then you had to go and score, if I'm not mistaken, did you score the game-winning goal against my Ranger alumni team?
I guarantee you, if you went to Vegas, there weren't a lot of bettors on Podine for the game-winning goal in that game. Yeah, it was fun. I'm
sitting there in the hospital room with my daughter, who's now a day old, and I'm thinking, do I really want to text Sean Podine about how he just scored and beat my Rangers?
It was awesome, guys.
Sean, you know, we were having a conversation before you came on, and how the discussion got started was a little weird, but we were discussing sports injuries and, you know, trying to prolong careers. I know in the pro wrestling industry, they sort of slowed down, and same thing with football. Now they're testing for concussions and worrying about long-term ramifications, and hockey is in that same realm. Do you think the game has changed for the better now with the testing for concussions as well as for long-term injuries?
Very much so, and I think we're going to continually see it adapt as we go, because if you look at these athletes today, they are just unbelievable, the speed, the power, the size. But the problem is the actual brain can't keep up with everything that's going on. So the harder the impact, the more hits, the more injuries are going to affect people long term. So I think you'll see the sport itself just kind of evolve, where, you know, people are like, well, you can't take checking out, or you can't, no, you don't take it out, but you just make it smarter, because we want to keep this sport of hockey, which I think is the greatest sport in the world. I want to keep going, keep getting better, keep being more accessible to more people. And if that means someone hits someone in the head, they're kicked out of the game, or they get 5 minutes, that's just what it is, until we can get this game to a point where now, as a parent, I don't have my wife or myself worried about my 6-year-old getting injured for something that could maybe affect him in school or in life, then we got to keep building it, keep growing it, keep developing it to a point where we can keep as many people involved as possible.
Sean, if you had just the choice to go see one player play in the NHL right now, who is it that you're going to see? Who really sticks out? You may say Crosby, but is there anyone else that it's just someone you love to watch play the game?
That is actually a great question. You got your Ovechkins, Crosbys. You got someone on every team that's just a beautiful player to watch. I compare it to Michael Jordan. I'm not a big basketball fan, but just to watch the athleticism of Michael Jordan on the court is just beautiful to see. And to be honest, probably my favorite player right now to watch it might be Patrick Kane.
Mm-hmm.
My little boy refers to him as the boss because he's just a pleasure to see play. And I watched him. I went down for a couple playoff games last year, and I watched him in warmups. His focus, his intensity, and same with Jonathan Tays. There's a gamut of guys you could pick. And just the focus and what they bring to the game is so fun to watch in pregame, during the game, and after. And, if I boiled down to two, it'd be Tays and Kane, but at the end of the day, Patrick Kane is just he's a difference maker. They both are, but he's just fun to watch.
Sean, can you tell us about some of your favorite moments playing?
Yeah, I actually think my favorite moment was my first shift when they dropped the puck just outside the blue line in front of my bench. I wheeled back, did two crossovers, fell, got up, and changed. And the coach came over and said, what happened? Are you okay? And I said, yeah, I'm just a little bit nervous. And to get that first shift over in the NHL was a pretty special moment. But, when I think back, I was just very blessed and lucky to be able to play a game that I absolutely loved. And at the end of the day, the friendships I made and to be around guys that loved something as much as I did was really, really special. And that's what I took away from the game as a whole.
All right. Well, Sean Poding, thank you so much for giving us a few minutes as you wrap up your family vacation in sunny Hawaii.
I'm so jealous. Like, you don't understand. Like, I'm leaving for Florida on Sunday, but I've never been to Hawaii. Does it really live up to the hype? Or, because we all look at Hawaii as this place where it's just a big island and everything is perfect, or is it, less desirable than that, fantasy?
Waikiki, Honolulu is kind of busy. It's just a city. I'm not huge on it. But we actually went to the Big Island for the first time, and when your day consists of about 12 daddy juices, dolphins in the lagoon, and sea turtles on the shore, that's a pretty cool day.
Sean, we really thank you for taking a few minutes on this Friday night. I hope you, when you get back up here, we can definitely talk with you again, especially when the NHL playoffs come around.
Would love to, guys. Just call me whatever you need anytime. Thanks so much, and have an awesome day.
Thank you.
All right, thanks, Sean.
Thanks, guys.
So I believe we are 2 for 2 tonight.
Yeah, he gave us a lot of insight about a lot into different aspects of hockey that you don't normally hear about.
Well, and I think what also made that fun, too, and, I hope you don't mind that I asked that question about the concussions, because hockey, look at Crosby. Crosby was out for so long with his concussion, and it affected the Penguins for quite a bit of time. So I'm glad we were able to get that question, because that's a love to hear on, older players on how they feel about, the way they're trying to clean up the sport.
And he was known as one of the more physical players in the game, so he's one of the better former players to ask because of the way that he was able to take the body and play aggressive hockey.
Well,
and he's just a good overall dude.
Oh yeah, he's a great guy. I think he's the type of guy where we had that one point where, like, I think you and I just said to each other, "We're done with questions, and what are we supposed to do now?" All right, good. All right. All right, let's wrap this bad boy up. So with all that being said, I don't even know how to react after that point. I think it's good that we're going to be off on Sunday this week. So Real Sports Talk Radio is going to be off on Sunday. You can usually find us every Sunday morning from 11 to 12:30 or 11 to 1. It just matters what we have going on. Sometimes we like to supersize our show. Supersize, we're like McDonald's. You know, you get it your way when you want to get it. Or is that Burger King?
McDonald's.
Either way, you're getting something good, and it's tasty, and you'll like it, I promise. Anyway, we'll be back next Sunday. I don't know what we have in store yet. Like, we pretty much knew ahead of time we were going to have Herman Edwards. You and I had discussed it, and we said, we got to get Herm on. You know, we were discussing this last week. I finally heard back from Frank Caliendo's people.
Nice.
And Frank Caliendo comes on, I can't wait, because I want him to do Jim Rome. I watched that Jim Rome impression on this show. Anyways, so we have possibly Frank Caliendo coming up. Over the next couple weeks, we're going to be having Randall Cunningham joining us, probably after the NFL draft. Randall's trying to get a job right now within the NFL as an assistant coach, as a quarterback coach. So we'll see how that plays out, too. Real quick, Ryan, I wanted to go back on a topic that you were discussing earlier about we were talking about the Jets. Rex Ryan spoke to the media the other day and needed to get your view. It sounds like he's still very toned down. He didn't sound like he wanted to lose Revis.
Well, of course he doesn't want to lose Revis. He knows that Revis is the best defensive, maybe the best defensive player in the game, but he's definitely the best cornerback in the game.
Oh, I understand that. And Revis is a great player, but he's coming off a knee surgery, and he wants a certain amount of money. I can't justify.
Yeah, he wants Mario Williams money. He wants to be among the top paid defensive players in the game. Whether or not I think he's right in asking for it, coming off a knee surgery, who knows? But Rex knows how important he is to the team. Rex is also saying that, knowing that his owner and the new general manager have no interest in signing him to a long-term deal.
You know, it's very interesting. If you go back now and look at the roster from Rex's first season as the head coach of the New York Jets, and you look at that roster now, I think there's only maybe a handful of guys left.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at the offense.
Well, Mark Sanchez is still there. For now. He's one of many quarterbacks that the Jets have on the roster right now.
I'm not going to lie to you. I was going to ask Herm if he had a tattoo of Rex Ryan's wife wearing a Mark Sanchez jersey on his arm.
How bizarre is that? I'm sorry. I'm a tattoo guy. I love a good tattoo. How bizarre is it that it's not even like it's a lifelike. It's almost like a Jessica Rabbit type tattoo of his wife, but with a Sanchez jersey. It couldn't just be like a number one where it's pretty generic. It had to be that six. It just seems awkward to me.
Wouldn't it have been awesome if, like, Sanchez got traded and Rex Ryan got fired and he had to go to another team? And he went to that same team, so they would just have to change the color of the jersey.
Yeah. He would have to go to a place where the quarterback wears number six. I don't know too many quarterbacks besides Sanchez that are wearing that right now.
You know what would be awesome? Actually, as Jim Rome would say, it would be awesome, spectacular. It would be awesome if that would have been changed into a Tebow jersey.
Oh, my God. What, what was there any bigger a circus? I guess it's just the perfect word for the way that the Jets season went down last year. But was there any bigger mishap than the way that that situation was handled? He came out and said that there's going to be 20 plays a game written, drawn up for Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow is going to challenge Mark Sanchez for the quarterback job. He had no intention on ever playing him, and it became very clear towards the end of the year when Sanchez was hurt and Greg McElroy was getting the snaps. I know Tebow was battling some sort of an injury too, but there was, I believe it was the San Diego game, that Tebow was ready to play and McElroy got the start. He had no intention of playing Tebow, and he didn't want anything to do with him being on the field, which is why the only time you saw him on the field was during special teams as the personal punt protector, which was a joke in itself.
Here's my problem with it, and this is something that Jose and I were talking about during the season. You had a situation where you had a guy under contract you didn't want under contract. He was forced there by Tannenbaum, that we're later finding out.
I think that it was more about Woody than it was about Tannenbaum. We all know that Woody Johnson lives for headlines and to be on the back page. And he got it, and I think he got more than he expected.
I agree. I think it's also one of those situations where you have a guy like Tim Tebow who was under contract. He's under contract to be the backup quarterback. Okay, so you have...
Well, you have to have backup quarterbacks under contract.
Yeah, he's in a backup. He's a backup quarterback. Well, no, but I'm saying, you know, you had McElroy there, so he was like... Sanchez was the starter, and then Tebow was the official backup. Okay, so now you're in a situation where he's contracted to be the number two guy, and from what Larry Hardesty told me, from what we had this long conversation, because he was out in Cortland this year, he said that offense they watched in Cortland was never put on the field. For some reason or another, Tebow and the Sanchez offense that they developed never saw the daylight. So it makes you wonder what's going on. So like we
what
never
is
saw.
Up?
Yeah, like what is up? What exactly are the New York Jets doing? They've won in 9 quarterbacks. Their offensive line are quarterbacks. They just reached out to Doug Flutie.
Remember the one rumor that they were thinking about bringing in Jamarcus Russell, who may be the biggest bust of all time, being drafted number one overall by the Raiders and just literally having zero career. But they weren't thinking about bringing him in as a quarterback. They were thinking about bringing him in as an offensive lineman because he's 306 pounds now.
Marcus Russell might be the best center in football right now.
Oh, my God. No, he's too slow.
He's too slow.
Someone who came out as being one of the Cam Newton-style quarterbacks is now 306 pounds and being looked at as being a potential offensive lineman. If that doesn't scream... My career is going nowhere, nothing.
Oh, God. I'm laughing about that aspect. Some other real quick sports news going on. It's something we didn't really talk about was after the Miami Heat game, LeBron James started chirping about the fact that there was a lot, it was a very physical game, very back and forth with the flagrant fouls. The referees didn't call in favor of the Heat. LeBron feels that he's a star, so he should get the star treatment. I don't want to hear this. I think you and I might be on the same boat on this. He has to just shut up and play. When Jordan was playing, Jordan would find a way to make you pay the next game. If you stop a streak or you get in his way of winning, Jordan will find a way to stop you the next time around. Jordan didn't go to the media and complain about not getting the calls. So I look at LeBron James as not an equal. Listen, he might be the most physically gifted athlete, like Herman Edwards said earlier in the show. He might be the most physically gifted athlete that we may have ever seen in the NBA, but he's still a kid, and he still acts like a kid. And I will tell you that if they do not win a championship this year, this season for them is an absolute bust.
Right.
And just when you think this team can start gaining a following and you can start getting behind this team after all of the chauvinistic things that the team did with the decision and the three of them getting together, fans were just starting to get back on in their good graces. This was a total 180 on them.
Right. And if you go back to the fouls, and I know that there was all this talk about which one of them, should both have been flagrant, should only the one on LeBron been a flagrant, and I know the NBA changed their ruling on what consists of a flagrant foul this year. But if you go back into the early to mid-90s, when you have the Charles Oakleys, the Anthony Masons, the Charles Barkleys, neither one of those are even personal fouls, let alone, maybe the hack on LeBron just because it was so blatant on a drive. But is what he did when he was being picked by Carlos Boozer, that wouldn't have been even called a personal foul in the early to mid-90s.
Listen, we are now at a point in the NBA where things are, I don't want to say our ass backwards, but listen, we were discussing this last week, and we were going over this with some of our other guests and doing some other time. We've been talking about how the league has changed, where it's very top-heavy league. We had Scott Farrell last week, and Scott Farrell pretty much, I said to him, I'm like, you don't know who the stars are on some of these teams. And he started naming all the stars on individual teams like DeMarcus Cousins and, John Wall. But what I was trying to make the point to him was the casual fan. A casual fan, if you go up to a guy in the sports bar, he's a diehard NHL fan, doesn't watch a lot of NBA. And I said, hey, by the way, who's the starting center for the Sacramento Kings or who's the star of the Utah Jazz? He's not going to have a clue. He's not going to have a clue. Whereas if I said to you 10 years ago or 15 years ago and I said, who's the stars of the Utah Jazz? You can say Karl Malone and John Stockton. Who's the star of the Sacramento Kings? You can say Mitch Richmond or even go as far as say Chris Webber at some point or another. Washington Wizards.
Time
out. Good.
Oh, no. Whenever I think of Chris Webber, I think of saying timeout.
Oh, okay. I just didn't know what you were. I thought you needed me to stop for a second. But you know what
I'm
saying.
No, because going back to the Fab Five days when Chris Webber called the most famous non-timeout call in the history of sports.
Yes. Again, it's one of those things where You hope a legacy, you hope a player's legacy can be remembered for something better. And Weber's legacy is not great for that. I feel a little bad for him, actually. I'm at a point now where I watch a lot of games in the NBA, and you look at some of these guys and you say, what are they going to be remembered for? I'm going to name you a couple NBA names. You let me know what's the first thing that comes to your mind. Dwight Howard.
Soft.
Well, I'm saying, what do you remember him? If he retired tomorrow, what do you
remember?
What will I remember him for? Probably the Superman dunk.
Okay, see, you know what? That becomes second fiddle to me now because of what happened with him and
right, with him and Kobe.
No, it was him and Orlando. Look, they started calling the Orlando Arena the Waffle House because he kept on waffling back and forth on whether he wanted to leave or not. You know, it's
right.
You know, that was like the biggest thing. Like, you think of LeBron James, you think right now of the greatest player of, you think of the greatest player, one of the greatest players in NBA history. It might be the greatest player in NBA history, but a couple of years ago before he won the championship with Miami, you thought of him as the guy who turned his back in Cleveland and became the biggest villain in sports. You know, and by the way, I think it's amazing in a span of 2 years, he went from being the most hated person in sports to being the most popular, the most notable NBA player again in the NBA. I think of Kobe Bryant.
If I can interrupt you real quick, because there's another guy who almost took the same route as LeBron in a completely different way, but is on the same roller coaster ride and almost at the same peak that LeBron is at. He's not there yet, but I think that Tiger Woods. What do you think about the resurgence of Tiger and how he's back to being ranked number one?
I'm not sure. Listen, Tiger Woods is in a very situation where we as media and we as fans were judging a situation about his personal life, which I think is the worst thing that we could do.
Right, and that's the same lines as Manti Te'o.
Yeah, I don't think it's any of our business what's happening in these guys in their personal lives. I think we have to be a little smarter. We have to be do we really care? Like, do I care what's going on with Kobe Bryant's Tiger Woods? Do I really care what's going on with Tiger Woods' personal life? Absolutely not. Is it
right,
a priority?
And the sad thing is that you had all that what happened with Tiger in his personal life and how public it was made. And he's now, it's been officially announced that he's dating superstar skier Lindsey Vonn. They had to keep it a secret only because they were afraid of what the media reaction would be because of what the mainstream media believes about his personal life. And that's tougher on him than it should be.
Yeah, again, I don't. It's just sound really weird for me to say this, and I think you'll agree with me though. With Tiger Woods, if he's not winning golf tournaments, that's what I care about.
Exactly. You know me. I'm not the biggest fan of a lot of superstar players. I'm not a big Jordan guy. I'm not a big LeBron guy. I'm not a big A-Rod guy, and that's not just because he's a Yankee. I was never an A-Rod guy even before he was a Yankee. Tiger Woods was always one of those superstars that I rooted for. And the fact that he is now showing this perseverance and in six starts winning three tournaments so far, reclaiming the number one ranking in the world, I'm happy for him. And I think that it's starting to get more about being Tiger playing golf instead of the guy who cheated on his wife playing golf when he gets the opportunity to.
I agree. I agree. There's not much else you can say about that. Real quick, Ryan, let's go over a couple of little things before we do sound off. We haven't done sound off. We didn't get to do sound off at all last week. Which sort of makes me sad because I like sound off. So basically, let's go over scoreboard again one more time. I think we're almost all caught up with all the finals. I'll start with the NBA. Over in the NBA right now, it's about a minute and a half left in the game. Brooklyn blown out by the Denver Nuggets. Denver Nuggets, who was the hottest team in the Western Conference, and nobody even realized it because the Miami Heat won 27 in a row. They're back on their winning ways. Portland is leading Utah 56-44. The Orlando Magic over the Washington Wizards is 97-92. The Celtics beat the Hawks 118-107. Charlotte falls to New York. We were discussing that earlier, and I lost my cool with that. 111-102. The Detroit Pistons fall to the Toronto Raptors 99-82. Things can't get any worse in Cleveland. Philadelphia defeats them 97-87. Memphis over Houston 103-94. Miami over New Orleans 108-89. Minnesota 101-93 over the Oklahoma City Thunder. And the San Antonio Spurs defeat the Los Angeles Clippers in San Antonio 104-102. Ryan, what do you have over there?
And on the NHL scoreboard, yeah, the Tampa Bay Lightning edging out the New Jersey Devils in a shootout 5-4. I have the Anaheim Ducks just getting by the Chicago Blackhawks with a score of 2-1 on a goal by Sheldon Soare with 2 minutes left in the game. I have the Dallas Stars beating Sean Podine's Minnesota Wild 5-3. And with 5 minutes left to go in Calgary, you have the Columbus Blue Jackets beating the Calgary Flames 5-4. Over in the NCAA, you have Duke with an 8-point lead right now over Michigan State, 47-39. And Florida Gulf Coast, who jumped out to a 24-14 lead on Florida, has given up the lead as Florida has gone on a 16-0 run and now leads 30-24 with under a minute left in the first. You had Louisville beating Oregon and Michigan beating Kansas.
And the scoreboard has been brought to you by Upbeat Custom Creations. They bring fame to your name, upbeatcustomcreations.net. Give them a look, see what they can do to bring fame to your name. Okay, let's do sound off. Ryan, you're up first. Go ahead, knock them out.
I'm going to talk a little bit about the New York Rangers. It's the one team that I will never miss a game for. And how inconsistent and bipolar a team can be. You have a team that can score 5 goals against Philly and make it look easy, and then lose 3-0 2 days later and look like a minor league team to the Ottawa Senators. And it's not the only time it's happened. This is something that happens too often for a team that was projected to win the East this year. I think something needs to change. I wouldn't be surprised if you see some players be called up and some players be sent down, some players be traded. Or even a worst-case scenario, a firing of the coach. But something needs to be changed. Henrik Lundqvist cannot do this on his own. There's only so much a goalie can carry a team who doesn't score.
And the Rangers are struggling. And I know as a Rangers fan, you don't want that. My rant tonight is a little bit more of a nostalgic feel. We all know that I'm a basketball guy. I'm a very big NBA guy. And I was a big fan of the New Jersey Nets when they were still in New Jersey. Now they're in Brooklyn. But 20 years ago today, Drazen Petrovic, the former shooting guard for the New Jersey Nets, basically winded down his season for the year and was getting ready to come back to the playoffs. this is 20 years ago. This year was Drazen's last year playing in the NBA, and went back overseas for his untimely death during the summer. Drazen was put into the Hall of Fame back in 2003, and I couldn't think of a better player who brings out the best of his teammates. Right now, we all wish in the NBA we had a guy who focused on just being the best athlete he can be and bring out the best in his team, not worrying about the shoe deals, the money deals, and everything else in the glitz and glamour that goes with the NBA. Drazen, we still miss you, and you're still a class act. Ryan, we did another show. It worked out perfectly. Enjoy your Sunday morning off. I'll be in Florida. We'll be back next Sunday, 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. for Real Sports Talk Radio. Check us out at backsportspage.com. Until then, Ryan, good night. We'll see you next week.
Good night, Randy. Have a good time in Florida.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Later, guys.